everyone. I'm Dr. Terry, and this is the Love Doctor program on Empower Radio, the show that gives you the facts about relationships and love. Now, I've been helping individuals and couples improve their relationships for the past 30 years, and today I'm here to give you science-based strategies for your relationships and those of your children. Welcome, welcome, everyone. It's Dr. Terry. Thanks so much for joining me today. I appreciate you. I have a great program for you today. Now, most of you, if you're single, have an idea of what you want in a romantic partner. But do you have a clear understanding of what you actually need? And in the era of dating apps, how do you sift through all the digital smoke and glitter to find a heart of gold? My guest today is Amari Ice, and he's been a guest on the program before, listeners, and I know you've loved him. He is known also as the Prince of Hearts and is a certified matchmaker and relationship coach. His expertise has helped over 500 gay men develop the skills necessary to find and keep love. Now, Amari's coaching philosophy is founded on his 12-step relationship process, which he outlines in his international best-selling book called Lasting Love at Last, The Gay Guide to Attracting the Relationship of Your Dreams. Today, we'll be discussing what you need to look for in a partner to be sure you've found an excellent romantic match. And for more information about Amari, you can go to AmariMeansLove.com. And listeners, this is amazing. You can get a free copy of his book at LastingLoveAtLast.com. So welcome to the program, Amari. Great to have you with us again today.
Yes, I am delighted to be back. Thanks for having me again.
Oh, absolutely. I loved talking to you last time, and I know that we will have a great discussion again today.
Oh, yes. It was so much fun. I'm looking forward to it.
Now, before we get started talking about finding the right match, please share with listeners how you became affectionately known as the Prince of Hearts. I love it. And and if they could see you now, there's going to be a crown on your head too.
Yes. So it's like a two-part story, but I'll keep it short. In terms of being the Prince of Hearts, ever since I was little, like, my family would always call me like the family psychologist or something, and my friends would all come to me for relationship challenges and advice and insights and stuff, and it just became like a nickname. So ever since I was little, I was the Prince of Hearts. And then in terms of the crown, that is actually really, really funny. I bought a crown to do some cool pictures during a client retreat that I had. And when you and I met last year at the Global Love Conference, I was taking more pictures, or intending to take more pictures, on the beach of the Dominican Republic, but didn't want to leave the crown in my luggage. So I wore it on the plane with me, and when I landed, there was a guy helping me find my bag, and he was like really, really excited and interested to figure out why I had a crown. So I explained the story, you know, I'm a relationship coach, matchmaker, and I'm the Prince of Hearts. So then fast forward to returning to the States, I go to the Dominican Republic's airport, and now the same guy happens to be a ticket agent. I guess they wear like all the hats.
Wow.
And when he saw me, he got really excited all over again, because apparently he told all of his coworkers about the interaction, and they didn't believe that he met a guy wearing a crown, calling himself the Prince of Hearts, who was a matchmaker. So when he saw me, he literally had everybody from behind the counters come over. Mind you, they all had people in their lines too. And so he was like, yeah, this is the guy I was telling you about. Everybody got really excited. And then he looks at my ticket and he says, oh, these aren't fit for royalty. And he upgrades my seats.
I love it.
Yeah.
That's
so ever since I've kind of just been wearing the crown everywhere.
Everywhere. I mean, I see it, listeners, on your website and all your photos. I keep wondering if you wear it to bed as well, Amari.
You know, I'll let you keep that guess.
Right, exactly.
I won't
exactly.
take that away from you.
You won't let me stop thinking that, right? Is that it?
Nope.
Oh, I love that story. Well, I know you know that I love your book, Lasting Love at Last. What motivated you to write the book?
Sure. So I actually worked in the LGBT empowerment field for about a decade and was already coaching. And I'd get a lot of clients who came around or about relationship challenges. And I like to give clients like books and other resources, because in one or two sessions, you might not remember everything that you learned, but you can always go back and reference a book. And so since most of my clients were Black gay men, I tried to find books that could relate to their experience. And in my search, I found thousands of books on straight relationships, maybe 20 or so on gay relationships, but literally couldn't find a single one that was written by a Black gay man or woman, even relationship coach, whatever. So since I'd had over a decade of expertise and experience, I decided that I was going to put together a resource to help them. And I ended up joining a manuscript writing program that helps you get it written in 9 weeks, not knowing that it was connected to a publishing company. And when I finished the manuscript, I also got offered a publishing deal, and then it like took on a life of its own. But ultimately, the reason I wrote it was to help people who didn't have, you know, resources that reflected their experiences.
And I like that. And listeners, remember that you can get a free copy of his book at lastingloveatlast.com. Now, you state, Amari, that most people have an idea of what they want in a romantic partner, but few people actually know what they need. So I think you're saying that want and need are very different. So help listeners understand what you mean. Why is there a difference? And what is that difference?
Sure. So the thing that we want are essentially our preferences, right? If you have an apple and an orange and your preference is for apples, then you'll take the apple when it's there. But if the apple's not there, you'll still eat the orange. That's just a preference. That's a want. But a need is something that is non-negotiable. So for example, if you are allergic to corn, like I happen to be, then if something has corn, you aren't going to eat it, even if nothing else is there. And that is what makes something a need. So when it comes to relationships, we often confuse wanting someone who's, you know, 6'2", or wanting someone who looks a certain way with what we actually need from that person to be happy long term, right? And so we don't need somebody who's a certain height. We want someone who's a certain height, but we need someone who will respect us and love us and make us feel safe over the long haul.
And so when I'm talking about partner qualities, I can still have wants, but I also need to understand that there are needs as well.
Yes, indeed. And often what happens is people not necessarily knowing what they need, they make their wants have much of a higher priority. And so they end up weeding people in or out just based on the preferences and not the needs. And that's when we end up getting into situations that don't work out or don't happen in our best interest.
So I have to identify what I want and I have to identify what I need. But, you know, let me tell you what a lot of singles say to me, Amari, and you tell me what you say to people. So a lot of singles tell me all the time that if love is going to happen, if a good relationship was meant to be, it will just happen. It's not in my control, is what people are saying. So in other words, I don't need to do anything. Finding love is just going to happen. And I get that all the time, right? I'm sure you do too. What do you say to people, singles?
You know, what we think is that love is this fairy tale, like you said, but the truth is love isn't a fairy tale. It's more like a video game. And the number one reason you're single or will soon be single again is because you're trying to have a level 25 relationship with level 3 skills. So ultimately, what you need to do to have a relationship is be able to prepare for that relationship, be able to navigate the dating process effectively, be able to enter into a realistic commitment. Like, there are specific skills you need that will prepare you for love, just like the skills that prepare you for, you know, your professional career. Like, there's no difference, but our culture teaches us how to be great employees. It ingrains in us the need to go to school and continually invest and develop in our skills and, you know, our beliefs, our habits, the mindset, all those things around around career, but not around relationships. But that's, once you do develop those skills, then the relationship is more under your control.
That's such a good point that, you know, society teaches us we have to go, you know, get an education. We need body language skills. We need to learn how to interview when we get a job, right? But it really doesn't tell us that we need relationship skills to have a good relationship. That is so true. So, okay, tell us then, Omari, what are the things that singles need to know to make sure that they have found a good romantic match? Or what are the skills that I need to learn to have a good relationship?
Well, the first skill is the ability to quantify what you need from a partner to be happy, because that's going to ensure that you're only investing in someone who's worth your time, worth your energy, worth your love. Otherwise, you end up wasting time on people who aren't worth it. So that's skill number one. The second thing is the ability to actually quantify whether or not someone can meet your needs. So even if you know what you want, you might not necessarily know how to ask the right questions or how to, you know, get the right evidence that someone can actually meet those needs, that someone actually has the capacity to fulfill you. Then you also need to be able to manage yourself, your own emotions, your own thoughts. So this is really about self-mastery and self-coaching. Like, maybe you have dating anxiety, or maybe you have baggage from the past, whether it's negative or positive, but like, the ability to be in control of your mindset and heart set are essential to being in a successful relationship. And there are a lot more skills, but those are like the main three or four.
And that's good. So let me just repeat them, Omari, at least the three that I heard. First was, you need to have the ability to list your needs, things that you need in a partner, qualities, right? For example, what would be one of those needs? Like, not that you can't eat corn, but what would be a need?
So that someone shares the same values that you share.
Okay. So that would be a need, because when I have a partner that shares my values and underlying attitudes, I'm less likely to have conflict. We're more likely to agree, and we're more likely to go forward with those similar values or attitudes. Is that correct?
Absolutely. Yes.
Okay. And then number two is that you need to make sure that your partner or potential partner could meet those needs. Now, how do I do that?
So these are like those interview skills you mentioned when it comes to a job, right? So if we put this in the same context, that'll make it easier for people to understand. The first thing that any organization does before they go hire someone is write the job description. So this would equate to your relationship needs, right? That this is right. All the things you need to have in order to be able to successfully grow in this position. Those are your needs. Then qualifying whether or not someone has them is your ability to sift through their resume to see if they deserve an interview, which would be the date. And then once they get on the interview, how to ask great questions to really be able to tell if what this person said on their application fits with the qualification that they actually have. Like, does this person really have the capacity to do these things, or are they just saying it? So that would be the easiest way to think of it. Your needs are the job description, and then your ability to quantify them are your interview skills.
And this skill really takes place when I'm on the date or I'm with a partner, whereas your first skill is all about me before I even go out on the first date, as well as the third one. You said manage your own emotions and thoughts. So look to see whether or not the past is influencing who you want or need. You're comparing. You're not really ready. You're bringing trust issues into a current relationship or a dating experience. So one in three has all to do with me, right?
Yep.
I like all that. Of it. All of it, these skills, huh? Even number two, does it have to do with me?
Even number two. Yeah, because even if the person, so say there's someone who you're on a date with, say they actually have the capacity to meet your needs, but you don't know that because you didn't know how to ask the right question. And so you don't go on a second date with them because you aren't sure. They could be a great candidate, but if you don't know how to tell that, that's still about your skill rather than their ability or their capacity. So that skill is focused on them. It's still your level of ability and comfortability doing that.
Excellent. So as a coach then, Amari, do you help singles through these skills, teach them how to acquire these skills?
That's exactly what I do. And it's my favorite thing to do. It's so much fun to help people assess exactly where they are. And so when I mentioned earlier the analogy of love being a video game and the reason you're single is because you are trying to have a level 25 relationship with level 3 skills, the way that I map this out, in order to be an eligible bachelor or bachelorette, there are about 12 key skills that you have to have that say you're actually ready to date. Now, skills 13 through 25, those are more like advanced skills that really matter once you're in the relationship. But if you have those base 12, you're able to figure the others out as you go. But the first initial 12 steps or 12 skills, those are the ones that if you don't have them, they'll sabotage your ability. So what I do enjoy the most is helping people develop that first grouping of skills.
That is great. And do most people think that they have those skills, Amari, when they come to you, or are they coming to you because they don't think they have those skills?
It's a combination. So some people are very clear, like, I have no idea what I'm doing. I just know that what I've been doing isn't working and I need help. Other right. people are like, look, there's not enough people where I live. The dating apps suck. Like, some people externalize the problem. And again, that's because our culture teaches us that it's outside of our control. So it's natural to think that, you know, it has nothing to do with you. But that actually puts you in a very disempowering position. If you don't believe you have any control, then you don't even seek to do anything to change what's going on because you don't believe you can.
Mm.
So that's usually the first thing that I have to help people see. Like, this is something that you can influence. This is something that you have the power to change, and I can show you how to do that. But if you don't believe that, then it doesn't matter if I can show you how to get there. Your disbelief that it's possible will end up making you sabotage even learning those steps.
Right. And I agree with you completely, as you know, Amari, that each of us has power and control over who we find, who we need, and who we partner with. And we cannot empower others with that control. We need to take it on ourselves. Now, you also talk a lot, as I've heard you in the past, about the difference between not being ready for a relationship and being afraid of commitment. So tell us what that difference is, not being ready for a relationship versus being afraid of commitment.
Sure. So it's kind of like the analogy that all squares are rectangles, but all rectangles aren't squares.
Okay, so keep going.
if you are not ready, that doesn't necessarily mean you aren't, you don't want to be in a committed relationship or you are scared of it, right? So just because you're scared, if you're scared, it could mean that you might not be ready. Right? There's some things that you clearly aren't sure of, that confidence, right? And so confidence is one of the things that will actually help you in a relationship. But confidence isn't a magical thing, again, in the way that we tend to think about it. Confidence is really based on evidence that you can consistently get a result based on the skills that you have. And so it means that in order to be confident, you have to have practice certain skills. And if you're not confident, which means you aren't ready, then that is something that needs to be addressed. But your fear of commitment, on the other hand, this usually, in most cases, has something to do with either trust issues or baggage from the past. And I just want to be clear that not desiring commitment and fear of commitment are two different things. If you just don't want to be in a relationship and you're clear on that, that doesn't mean you're scared of it. It just means you don't want it, right? So that's right. A different conversation, but just that wanted to put that out there. So fear of commitment is about trust issues. It can mean that you might have an avoidant attachment style, but in either case, it's usually something that you went through that makes you afraid to open up to people, because either you believe you're going to be hurt again, or you believe that, you know, it's going to be too much work and too much pain to be able to just open yourself up, even if that person won't necessarily hurt you.
Right. And I know you talked about attachment style, and you mentioned avoidant attachment style. Briefly, help listeners understand attachment style and why it may be so important as we form relationships as adults.
Sure. Our attachment styles are essentially the glue that allows us to connect with another person in a romantic situation. And it can often influence non-romantic relationships too. And for most of us, our attachment styles are actually developed as children with our parents, because those are the first people that we learn to be attached to. And when we think about our style, it's essentially two scales. The first is the degree to which you fear intimacy. And then the second is the degree to which you fear abandonment. Okay. And right. Fear intimacy or avoid intimacy, we can say it that way too. So based on those two scales, it determines what your attachment style is. If you don't avoid intimacy and you don't fear abandonment, you're secure. You're able to, you know, give people space when they need it or be close with people. Like, you're pretty chill. You don't really take things personally when it comes to relationships, and you're settled in who you are. If you avoid intimacy, but you don't fear abandonment, then you have an avoidant attachment style. And that means it's hard for you to let people in. And about 20 to 25% of people have an avoidant attachment style. 50% of people are secure. And then if you fear abandonment, but don't avoid intimacy, you have an anxious attachment style. And this means you're always wondering if the person you're with is going to leave you, or if, you know, people will disappear or not be there long, or if you're doing something wrong. And so you're experiencing like hypervigilance to make sure you aren't messing things up, which ends up in many cases making you move too fast or do too much or try too hard. And then, and there are about 20-25% of people have that attachment style too. And then there are people who are both avoidant of intimacy and fearful of abandonment. And that's about 5% of people. And generally when that happens, it's because of some traumatic experience in childhood that made parenting both inconsistent and also introduced fear into the household for some reason. So that's the quick fear. And dirty. Right. Like,
oh, you did a great job. Quick and dirty explanation of attachment styles. And for listeners who want to know more about Amari Ice or attachment styles, remember, you can go to Amari Means Love. We are all out of time, Amari. Any one few sentences that you want to say as we end this segment?
Sure. If I summed up knowing what you need in five things, we can say that MATCH is the acronym. The first is having mission and values that are aligned. The second is attraction. T is having compatible temperaments. C would be making sure the person has the capacity to meet your needs now. And then H would be that they're hazard-free, meaning they don't have any of your deal breakers. And if a person matches or fits all five of those requirements, then they're a match.
Excellent. I like that. Match. MATCH. Excellent, yep. Amari. Thank you so much for joining us again. I always love talking with you, and I look forward to being with you at a conference soon in London as well.
Yes. Going to be so much fun. Thank you so much again for having me back.
Absolutely. And again, listeners, if you want more information about Amari Ice, his book, or his matchmaking and coaching, go to AmariMeansLove.com or LastingLoveAtLast.com. You can also connect with Amari on Instagram at Prince Amari or Facebook at Amari Means Love. And as always, thank you for listening. I appreciate you. I'm Dr. Terry, and this is the Love Doctor program on Empower Radio. I'm here to help all your relationships, including the one with yourself, be the best they can be. My personal website is Dr. Terry, thelovedoctor.com. where I provide you with science-based relationship advice that's easy to understand and include in your life. So listeners, until next time, here's to your healthy, happy relationships.